All right, hello. So sometimes I watch The Voice with my mom, and they have this thing they do kind of off stage when they're being introduced as coming up next. So when Don said, "And next we'll have Regina Don Acres," I was tempted to go, but I didn't because I knew you guys wouldn't know what I was doing, so I didn't do it. Things get in the brain if you watch them enough, right? So we are here for The Guiding Light. And I am reading from What is the Self with Bernadette Roberts. And it looks like I'm going to begin at the bottom of page 33. Boy, it's hard to believe we're only on page 33, but it's true. Because look how thick it is. But, it had lots of introductions and stuff at the beginning that I skipped. So the paragraph at the very bottom of the page, which means we're past all the question marks now, is where I'm going to begin reading. I think I'll read a few sentences above just to get us in the groove, because I don't think I've read this in a couple weeks. Last week I just talked. So I'm starting a few sentences above. Let's see. A Buddhist can put off his nirvanic experiences and with his wealth of compassion go forth to save all sentient beings. Certainly, this is a movement outward to all life and to a life of selfless giving. This is not, of course, a forfeiture of the unitive state, which cannot be forfeited any more than the butterfly can return to its larva stage. Rather, this going forth means putting behind the delightful and lofty nirvanic experiences, which add nothing to the immediate enlightened condition. As long as we continue to exist in this world, the expression of love and compassion is a million times greater than our transient experiences of another existence, wherein this world is neither seen nor known. So, of course, just to bring us back to what Bernadette is talking about in her story, she's talking about the time that, she had spent some time in seclusion as a nun, and she had had great spiritual experiences, deep, deep devotion to God. But then she awoke to the unitive state, and at that point, she began to feel guided into the world. So she actually left being a nun. We know she eventually got married. She had 4 children. And so she's talking about this being called outward into the world within the unitive state rather than, continuing deep devotion practices and waking up to the absolute. And again, one thing she talks about, kind of in one moment, she talks as if it was a choice. And in another moment, she talks as if it wasn't a choice. That this is just what happened. So we'll leave it at that. And we'll begin the new paragraph. The turning point then is when the whole movement of the journey turns around. In the beginning, the movement was inward. But having come to the infinite divine center, there is no further to go inward. And the movement turns around and begins to go outward. One of my 7 steps journals talks about going inward until in explodes out and in is all there is. So maybe she's talking about the same kind of thing. You go inward, 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 seeking God, or seeking truth until in explodes out and all there is God or all there is truth, right? And that would be the unitive state. So again, the turning point then is when the whole movement of the journey turns around. In the beginning, the movement was inward, but having come to the infinite divine center, there is no further inward to go, and the movement turns around and begins to go outward. This outward expansion is virtually an expansion of divine love and our love for the divine. This reminds me of Sufism. The Sufi talks about serving others. Except, the Sufi says, there are no others to serve. that in serving others, you're serving God, right? That's all that's out there is God. So you're never really actually serving others, although it may have that appearance. You're only always serving God or only always serving self. And this reminds me of Jesus too, right? Jesus in the Bible talked about whatever you do for the least of my brothers, you've done for me, right? If you visit my brothers in prison, you visited me in prison. I don't remember the other examples he gave. There were a few examples. And his apostles were like, you know, when did we visit you in prison? Right? And he says, whatever you have done for the least of them, you have done for me. So this outward expansion is virtually an expansion of divine love and our love for the divine. Everyone is the divine. So whoever you serve, whether that be your parent, your spouse, your children, your neighbors, people you don't know at all, right? They're all the same one. They're all God. Few people realize or recognize that the inward journey has a definitive end, and that at one point, man's psychological, spiritual journey becomes an outward movement. We have to be cautious, however, that there is no premature going outward or an untimely return to the marketplace. I like that she's saying that right now because, you know, part of the risk of reading books like this is that people don't follow their own journey. They read about someone else's journey and make an intellectual assumption about what they are to do, and they go and do it. You know, the difference to me about following your own journey and intellectually copying someone else's journey is, again, that inner guidance. You know, I love A Course in Miracles, that A Course in Miracles talks about each one's guidance is, the language it chooses is highly individualized. I think that's really important that we listen to those words, highly individualized. Because if we pay attention to those words, we can't make the mistake of intellectually copying someone else. If I trust that my spiritual journey is going to be highly individualized, I have to tune in for my guidance because there's nobody out there for me to copy. Do you hear that? And I think some of the people who have grown to dislike me the most are people who in the beginning tried to copy me most closely. There was one person I remember in particular, you could just feel how much she was trying to be me. And at some point, you know, she ended up strongly disliking me, and it makes perfect sense because without knowing it, she was being completely unfaithful to herself. And the dissatisfaction with that ended up being projected on me. So the most important thing, and I say this with my whole heart and soul, and I pray that people listen. The most important thing about the spiritual journey is learning the difference between your ego and your inner guidance, and then choosing to disregard your ego and follow your inner guidance. If you get that part down, everything else will happen fine. The problem is, again, that people don't get that part down, and they don't understand that the ego plays the spiritual path game too. Right? The ego plays the spiritual path game too. So we have to be cautious, however, that there is no premature going outward on an untimely return to the marketplace. In other words, again, you know, my interpretation of that sentence is, it's important that you're always following your guidance. And you know what else that's really important about following your guidance? Nobody else has to understand it. Nobody else has to approve of it. Nobody else has to agree. And some of you who were at the fall retreat heard me say this, that once upon a time, a Buddhist nun and I promised each other, and I haven't spoken to this woman in years, but at that time we were good friends. And we used to meet on the phone, regularly, and talk spiritually with each other. But we made a promise one day that we would, if we had to, walk this path absolutely alone. You know, it's fun to have friends, right? I mean, awakening together in a way is about having friends that support you. But what if you have to choose between your friends and your guidance? What if it comes to that? What choice are you going to make? And that's the promise that she and I made each other, that we would always choose the guidance over. I see a tell walking by. I don't have a tell to walk by here. I'll just pretend. That we would always choose our guidance, right? Even if we had to walk completely alone. All right, let me get back to Bernadette. So we have to be cautious, however, that there is no premature going outward or an untimely return to the marketplace. When this happens, we have a case of the blind leading the blind. And you know what? If you're trying to copy someone else rather than finding your own guidance, you're actually listening to your ego. And my God, that's the blind leading the blind, is it not? Right? But the turning point is well marked. When we come to it, we shall know it, and there will be no doubts. And this is only true if you're really tuned into your inner guidance. I have no doubts about my inner guidance. I don't know what others are going to think about it when I share it with them. But I have no doubts about my inner guidance. And I suppose the reason for that is, for a very long time now, many years now, since about 2004, I haven't wanted anything but that. And as you guys know, I've been tested, right? I mean, I had guidance to leave my job as a single mom, you know, with a, hell was Jasmine at the time, maybe a 7-year-old daughter. I had guidance to move to Pueblo where I didn't know a soul. Guidance to start awakening together, even though I got sick to my stomach when I said the word church. And I did ask Jacqueline. Jacqueline was like one of the first people I had to tell. Oh my God, it was so hard just to say it out loud. I've been guided to start a, church. You know, I've been tested. And that's kind of important for you guys to know. I've heard people say things to me. I remember somebody said to me once, this was a long time ago, but he said to me, I'm guided that in 5 years after my kids finish college, I'm going to sell my house and travel. You know, and kind of under, you know, inside, I didn't say it to him, but I was kind of like, bulge, you know, the rest of that sentence. No way. You don't receive, that's called a preference. That's called a plan. And I think guidance has surprised me every time. I don't think guidance has ever once been what I expected. Except maybe in a way this latest guidance about pulling back, although I didn't expect this exact form because I didn't expect anything that happened between the beginning and now. But in the beginning, when that movie came, and at the end, you know, the movie I was guided to watch on that first day when I received my calling, when the end of the movie came and the hero in the movie returned to his family, I knew that meant something for me. But I didn't know the details, you know, but when I was standing at the fall retreat in 2016, I think it was, and I heard it's time for the end of the movie, I knew exactly, well, I knew kind of what that meant, not exactly. So that's the closest to what I expected, But it would also be a lie to say that I expected it. It's kind of one of those paradoxes, right? For the most part, though, I mean, you know, when the guidance came to move to Pueblo, I didn't know that was going to happen. When the guidance came to ride in TI, I never dreamed something like that would happen. Even the day the guidance came to write with the Holy Spirit and teach what I write, that thought had never crossed my mind in advance. You know, if you sit around, you think about something for a year or 2 years, one day I'd like to do this. Boy, this would be nice. I'd like to do this. And then one day the idea pops up. And how do you know that's guidance? Yeah, it might have just came from the fact that you sat there and thought about it for 2 years. I like it when guidance is a surprise, when I never imagined that I would do that, because then I know it's guidance. So one of the best ways to know your guidance, I always say, is not to want for any change at all. Be happy with what is. When the guidance came to move to Pueblo, I was under the assumption I'd live in New London, North Carolina for the rest of my life. You know, I wasn't looking around for a place to move to. I wasn't wishing that a move would happen. So if you just be happy with what is, then when the guidance comes for some kind of a change, you know it didn't come from you because you weren't looking for a change, right? So again, the turning point is well marked. When we come to it, we shall know it and there will be no doubts. And I agree with that, assuming. Now, you know, and I think she's in the same boat here. I don't think she became a nun thinking in her head, someday I'm going to reach some spiritual, epic, some spiritual pinnacle. And then I'm going to leave the nunnery and I'm going to go back out into the world and I'm going to get married and I'm going to have children. She didn't see this coming, right? She was living in the moment. She felt called to become a nun. She became a nun. And she was a nun up until the time the guidance came to leave that. Right? This wasn't some 5-year plan that she decided in advance. This is why she had no doubts. It didn't come from her. As a milestone, it is so critical that if it does not occur, we go no further with the journey. Now, that's a funny story. For me, I kind of told this story the other day, but I guess I'll tell it partially again. I am feeling guidance to step back from the role of president minister with Awakening Together, and we'll be talking more about that in the near future. But I am feeling that guidance, and I will be doing that. But there came a time in October when I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if that was a good idea. And I asked within again if I was to do that. And when I asked within, the feeling that I got was the feeling of building a dam. Like if I didn't leave the role of president minister, I was building a dam and it would stop the flow. And as soon as I got that feeling, I immediately dropped any doubts that I had, any concerns that this wasn't the right move. I mean, I just forgot about it because I didn't want to build a dam. That's all there was to it. It didn't even matter that in that moment, there might have been what some reasonable people would call a reason for doubt. It was irrelevant against the guidance. And this is really what she's saying she felt too. When her guidance came for her change to go from being a devout nun to going back out in the marketplace, she says this milestone was critical because if it did not occur, she could go no further with the journey. It's like building a dam. And that's the way I felt too. I didn't know at the time that it was my own dam that I would be building. I knew I was building a dam. But over the holidays, it became clear to me that if I continue to stay in the role of president minister, and I don't let whatever step into whatever is coming next, it's my own dam that I'm building. I stop my own spiritual growth. You could say that I have mastered what I need to master in that particular position. And now for me to master what needs to be mastered next, I have to be put in a different situation. I remember when I started as President Minister of Awakening Together, you know, when I was guided to start this church, and we got a team of people together to build it, I remember one of the first things that happened was I recognized somebody in me. She's what I call Business Regina. You know, I used to be a fairly successful person in corporate America. I was a director of a nationwide training department. I had people who worked for me on both coasts. And we were even a national award-winning training department. And I had this business personality that I carried into cross-functional meetings and, you know, and had discussions with people in order to reach agreements on what was going to be done and all this kind of stuff. But from the time that I was guided to leave my job until I was guided to start Awakening Together, there was no need for Business Regina. She didn't need to be there for NTI, you know, for my relationship with Laurent, for any of that. But when I started Awakening Together, I was working in teams again, and I felt her rise up again. And one of the first things I knew, I mean, I knew this within the first couple of months, one of the first things I knew was that Business Regina had to be healed and that this team environment of Awakening Together was going to help heal Business Regina. And it was tough, you know, just like any serious healing is. It was tough healing Business Regina. But she's gone now. You know, I can feel the difference in myself when I said it. In meetings, that's not Miss Regina setting in meetings anymore. So this role of president minister spiritually has fulfilled itself for me. And now for whatever my next step is, I need to be willing to leave this role and go into life as it unfolds next differently. So as a milestone, it is so critical, and I would say this is any major guidance turning point. As a milestone, it is so critical that if it does not occur, we go no further with the journey, which means we can never come to the end of the unitive state this side of the grave, unless the true self or egoless self has lived to the fullest extent of its unitive potential. And how do we know what the fullest extent of our human or unitive potential is? I mean, not one of us knows, you know, what physical roles we're here to fulfill. Not one of us knows. I promise you that. You may think you know, but you're wrong. The only way to fulfill those roles and live them to the fullest of their extent is to keep going forward step by step following guidance. And again, what she is telling us is we will not awaken to the absolute until we have completed our purpose. And again, you don't know what your purpose is. And some people, when they hear the word complete their purpose, they imagine something lofty. And so they think their normal, everyday, non-lofty life isn't it. But they're wrong. Right where you are is right where you're supposed to be. And you're supposed to be living that to the fullest of your ability, healing right where you're at. You know, whether you're doing it as a grandmother, whether you're doing it as a single person that never got married, you know, whether you're doing it in a professional job, whether you're doing it retired, whether you're going to be the next president minister of Awakening Together. You can't help but live your purpose. The question, the only question, is are you living it well? And by living it well, I mean living it for the purpose of healing, living it for the purpose of awakening, living it with the right mind to the best of your ability, letting go of the wrong mind to the best of your ability. Because I think you can stumble through your purpose asleep and spiritually not achieve. Like you're going to go through those roles asleep. Or you can go through those same roles waking up, because that's where your focus is. But you can't not go through the roles you're going to go through. I remember John Sherman. You know, John Sherman was in prison, right? And I saw him being in, when he woke up, he was in prison. And I saw him being interviewed by someone, and he was talking about all of his experiences in prison. And I swear the interviewer was almost like envying the fact that he was in prison, you know, because that had given him so much opportunity. And John Sherman said, you know, my life was perfect for me. And then he looked at the interviewer and he said, but your life is perfect for you. And you see, that's something every one of you can count on. Every one of you. Your life is perfect for you. So you are living your purpose, I promise. The only question you have to ask is, am I living it well? It's kind of like in the movie, The Peaceful Warrior, when, I can't remember her name, Joy, was that her name? Joy, Jill, Joy, Joy. Joy asked Dan Millman after his accident. He was sitting under the tree and he was being a little grumpy because life wasn't going the way he thought it should. And she leans into him and says, are you paying attention? Right? That's really the question. Are you paying attention to your life? That's how you live it well. That's how you find your healing opportunities. That's how you find out whether you're listening to the wrong mind or the right mind. It's that life that you have right now, and are you paying attention? And if that big unexpected guidance comes up to make a change, make the change. I mean, it's I promise you it's taking you out of your comfort zone, but you've apparently been in that role long enough. You've gotten what you could out of it. And that's why the guidance for the change is coming. The guidance won't come for a change as long as you can still advance right where you're at. But when you've gotten all you can out of that, it will take you to the next place. And when you've gotten all you can out of this lifetime, it will take you to the absolute. As a milestone, it is so critical that if it does not occur, we go no further with the journey, which means we can never come to the end of the unitive state, this end of the grave. If we don't make those changes, we're never going to awaken on this, you know, in this lifetime. It's not going to happen if we have to stay in that comfort zone. Unless the true self or egoless self has lived to the fullest extent of its unitive potential, there can be no ending of self or consciousness while still in this world. You got to live your roles well. The whole purpose of this state is to bring us to yet a further end, which end is the death of the self and the death of the divine. In Christian terms, Christ's own death. It's the death of everything but the absolute. Perhaps the difference between those who move on and those who do not lies in the particular experiences we have been discussing. In simple terms, the turning point is the realization that even the unitive state is impermanent, and that until it permanently falls away in death, it must be fearlessly exercised in the here and now. That's living your life well. Your life is fearlessly exercised in the here and now. Are you paying attention? Thank you. I'm releasing love.